The information and opinions presented in this ARC Energy Ideas podcast are provided for informational purposes only and are subject to the disclaimer link in the show notes.
This is the ARC Energy Ideas podcast with Peter Terzakian and Jackie Forrest, exploring trends that influence the energy business.
Welcome to the ARC Energy Ideas podcast. I'm Jackie Forrest.
And I'm Peter Terzakian. Well, there's been no end of discussions, Jackie, on electric vehicles on this podcast, and so we're going to talk some more. But this time from a slightly different angle. You say there's more and more traction behind electric vehicles, and most people debate batteries and charging stations and range anxiety and so on. But electricity to drive a motor and a set of wheels can also come from something called a fuel cell. That's a device that combines hydrogen and oxygen to produce electricity and something as simple as pure water, H2O. Fuel cells are nothing new. They go back to the 1800s of various types, but now in the age of this energy transition, certain types of fuel cells are being championed to power vehicles to generate the electricity to turn the motor to power the wheels, especially ones in things like buses and trucks where batteries are more problematic. Now, few in our country here in Canada know the pioneering work of Jeffrey Ballard and his Vancouver-based fuel cell company called Ballard Power Systems. It was founded in 1979, and it's now recognized as one of the preeminent manufacturers of fuel cells in the world today. And it's helping to lead the hydrogen revolution, something else that we've talked a fair bit about on this podcast. Well, Mr. Ballard has long passed, but we are delighted to have with us today Randy McEwen, who is the current CEO of the enduring and growing Ballard Power. Welcome to the show, Randy.
Thank you, Peter and Jackie. Great to join you.
Great. Well, we're really excited to hear about the state of hydrogen and fuel cells, but for the benefit of our audience, maybe first tell us a bit about yourself and how you became the CEO of Ballard.
Well, sure. It certainly wasn't a straight line. I was originally a lawyer by training and practiced mergers and acquisitions and corporate finance, a Toronto-based law firm. And one of the clients that we had at that time was in the hydrogen fuel cell industry. And so I started getting exposure to the industry around 1997. I was always fascinated with the potential of hydrogen to decarbonize energy, industry, and mobility. So I ended up leaving the practice of law and joining the hydrogen fuel cell industry in 2001. And about 4 years later, it was very clear to me the industry just wasn't happening on the time scale or timeline that was expected. It was very clear that companies would struggle for some time with valuations and the ability to raise capital. So I moved from the hydrogen fuel cell industry into the solar industry, moved down to California, and joined the solar industry, which was going through a really meteoric rise at that time. And so while I was in the solar industry for about a decade, every quarter I continued to track the hydrogen fuel cell space and always looking for the opportunity to rejoin, because I know that there's a very strong linkage and opportunity between renewables and hydrogen. And in 2014, Ballard was going through a CEO succession planning and contacted me at that time. So it was a great opportunity to return to the industry. And of course, during that decade, a lot of change had happened during the industry, including on technology advancements.
Just give us a thumbnail of Ballard Power. I mean, I think a lot of Canadians have heard of it, but don't really know how big you are. About how many people do you employ in Canada? And I don't know if you have operations outside of Canada.
We design and manufacture fuel cell engines for mobility applications. It's a 42-year-old company based in Burnaby, British Columbia, publicly traded on NASDAQ and the TSX for over 25 years. Today, we have about 1,000 employees, about 850 in Canada, another 150 or so in Europe, China, and the U.S., excluding some joint ventures we have in China. And what's really powerful is that every day the entire team at Ballard gets fired up about this opportunity to decarbonize mobility and pass on to the next generation a more sustainable planet.
Wow, 1,000 people. I didn't realize it was that big. I thought it was more like 500 or so. So it's even grown since I last spoke with you. So we want to talk about three things. We want to talk about those exciting technologies, products, and markets that you serve. Talk a bit about the hydrogen economy at large, the ups and the downs, especially the downs in the past and now sort of the upswing. And then we want to talk a little bit about what's different today and the outlook for the next few decades as we think about decarbonization and the broader hydrogen economy. So why don't we start with the technology? You use a technology called proton exchange membrane, or PEM for fuel cells. Why don't you give us a thumbnail of how that works and the advantages over other fuel cell technologies for mobility?
So there are different fuel cell types And, you know, I think they're all basically the same. They have anodes, cathodes, and electrolytes. And how they're typically differentiated is the type of electrolyte. So at Ballard, like many other companies focused on mobility applications, we use what's called proton exchange membrane, or PEM, fuel cell technology. And the key reason for PEM fuel cell technology for mobility applications is that they have the ability to stop start very quickly. So it matches the duty cycle or profile load requirements for mobility applications, as well as a number of stationary power applications, for example, backup power that needs to turn on right away. Mm-hmm. So there are other types like solid oxide and carbon molten and others that are typically used in stationary power applications where you turn them on and leave them on.
Right. So what you're saying is that for a bus or a truck or any vehicle, you put your foot on the accelerator, all of a sudden there is a big draw on electricity to get the vehicle going, and that the PEM fuel cells are the best at being able to quickly bring that hydrogen and oxygen together to create the electricity and then ease off again.
Exactly.
Okay, so the advantages are that that's more conducive to mobility. Give us a sense of fuel cells relative to batteries. We know the battery price, especially lithium ion, has really come down in price over the course of the last decade. What's the cost trajectory of fuel cells? Because a lot of people say that, oh, you know, they're too expensive and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think there are two important points here, Peter. One is that batteries and fuel cells, we don't really view as competitive. We view them as highly complementary. And so where you have mobility applications that are lightweight, low, you know, range requirements, low utilization, have lots of opportunity for recharging, we think battery electric is very compelling. By contrast, where you have mobility applications that have heavy vehicles with heavy payloads, long range, high utilization requirements, and a need for fast refueling, fuel cell is very competitive. And where you have fuel cell technology, it should be understood that any fuel cell electric vehicle will use batteries. And so highly complementary, because the same driveline technology is used whether it's a battery electric vehicle or a fuel cell electric vehicle. In terms of the cost trajectory, you know what we saw in the solar industry, in the wind industry, and more recently in the battery electric industry, we will see over the next 10 years, between now and 2030, in the fuel cell industry. And we're forecasting about a 70% reduction for the cost of fuel cell technology, as well as a 70% reduction for the cost of electrolyzers, which allow us to make low-cost green hydrogen. In fact, the U.S. DOE has just announced an Earthshot program targeting the cost of $1 per kilogram for hydrogen by 2030.
So the technology that's used to create green hydrogen, it has the same component as the fuel cells. I didn't actually realize that.
So fuel cells and electrolysis are reverse processes. You know, it's not necessarily the same equipment, but it's a reverse process. So there's a lot of leverage that can be realized from scaling up both fuel cell technology and electrolysis technology in parallel.
Yeah, so you bring hydrogen and oxygen together. Oxygen comes from the air. It creates electricity and water, H2O. That's the fuel cell. The electrolyzer is the reverse. Put in electricity, and out comes hydrogen and oxygen from the water.
Right. So the improvement in costs of going one direction should help the others.
Right.
But Randy, correct me if I'm wrong. I think today, buses is an area that electric's really taking off. Today, would you say that buses are lower cost to be battery, but you're saying in the future, you're expecting fuel cells to become more competitive?
Yeah, today, fuel cells would be at a premium to battery electric buses. And that's, of course, because batteries have been out there longer and more mature in terms of deployments. But I do want to make an important point here. If we were having this discussion 3 or 4 years ago, the number of fuel cell vehicles in operation globally was de minimis. But today, as an industry, there are about 40,000 fuel cell passenger cars in operation today. There are 40,000 fuel cell forklifts in operation today, typically at Walmart, Home Depot, Amazon-type distribution centers. And today there's about 7,000 hydrogen buses and commercial trucks in operation, the lion's share of them with Ballard technology inside. So we've validated now the technology. It's all about cost reduction. And so while we're at a certainly a premium in terms of cost to battery electric buses today. What we see is that transit operators have certain routes, certain duty cycles where battery electric buses satisfy the use case, and other routes where fuel cell electric vehicles will be required because of the longer range opportunity. So what we see going forward from a cost reduction perspective is really fuel cell electric vehicles, whether it's buses, trucks, trains, marine, depending on the application, we see a total cost of ownership crossover point occurring not just with battery electric, but also with legacy diesel or internal combustion engine technology, typically between 2023 and 2028, depending on the application and the geography.
So how far away are 18-wheelers powered by hydrogen? I mean, I know you can do it now, but I mean, in terms of starting to see some meaningful conversion of the big heavy hauling fleet into the hydrogen world?
So we're focused on the medium and heavy duty motive use cases of bus, truck, rail, and marine. And there are three key reasons for that. And I want to explain that before we comment on 18-wheelers. So the three key reasons, number one, as I pointed out earlier, the value proposition for fuel cells are strongest where you have heavy vehicles, long range, high utilization requirements, and a need for fast refueling. The second reason is that we're focused on these applications that typically have what we call return to base or depot refueling. So think about city buses that come back to a yard or base at night, currently to diesel refuel. Or think about regional haul trucks or drayage trucks in the port of Long Beach or LA as an example that come back to a base at night and currently diesel refuel. Or think about a train that comes back to a train station or a marine vessel coming back to port. So we're focused on these market opportunities where you can have centralized depot refueling or point-to-point refueling. So you don't need to have a distributed refueling infrastructure. And then the third reason we're focused on these applications of bus, truck, rail, and marine is that they disproportionately contribute to emissions. So about 10% of all on-road vehicles in North America are buses and commercial trucks, yet they disproportionately contribute about a third of GHG from mobility and a whopping two-thirds of NOx and PM 2.5. So where we're focused on kind of the nearer-term commercialization in these markets is where you have the opportunity for centralized depot refueling. So we see this as a lower barrier to entry. So for example, in the port of LA and Long Beach, currently there are demonstrations going on with fuel cell trucks. So when you talk about 18-wheelers, what we see occurring very early is these deployments for drayage trucks or regional haul trucks or distribution centers where you've got, relatively speaking, a tethered truck that comes back to base at night. If you're thinking about the 18-wheeler going across state, going across province, going across country, that is a significant build-out, I think, you'll see in the 2030 timeframe.
So you think in the 2030 timeframe, we could have like along major interstates in the U.S. and, you know, the Trans-Canada highway here, we would actually potentially see fuel cell fueling stations with hydrogen?
Yeah, so there are quite a few fueling stations out there today, and people don't know that, in certain regional clusters, right? So for example, in Japan, there's over 100 refueling stations. In Germany, there's about 80. In California, there's about 50, and a handful here now, three, I think, in Vancouver. So those are retail fueling stations for passenger cars. What we see, of course, are build out of hydrogen fueling stations for commercial vehicles as well. So if you look at Europe, for example, where they recently passed what's called Fit for 55, which is really looking to reduce emissions 55% by 2030 compared to 1990 levels. Mm-hmm. And in the Fit for 55, the EU showed that the only way to get there is to include hydrogen as a key plank of their decarbonization strategy. And part of that Fit for 55 is allocating resources and funding for the build-out of a hydrogen network to support hydrogen-powered 18-wheeler trucks and buses and coaches across Europe. So we will see these corridors develop that will enable hydrogen refueling mm-hmm. for these type of applications.
And how are the fleet operators of these long-haul trucks thinking about this? They've got their existing diesel trucks that they work a century of reliability. And, you know, what's it going to take for them to start thinking about flipping over into hydrogen or these kind of technologies?
I think there's a couple of things they need to see. One, of course, is the, you know, reliability of the product. So that's being proven out right now. So literally today at Ballard, you know, we have in the range of 3,500 buses and commercial trucks in operation with Ballard technology. It's approaching now 100 million kilometers of in-revenue service. So I think from a reliability perspective, there's validation of the technology. Then you move to the total cost of ownership, and that's really about driving down the cost of hydrogen, because for these type of vehicles, the fuel is a significant portion, typically 30-40% of the total cost of ownership for the vehicles. And what we see now, particularly if you look globally and the announcements, there's about over 350 large-scale hydrogen projects announced, over $500 billion to be spent between now and 2030 to build out hydrogen production and the use of that hydrogen then in a variety of applications, including these mobility applications.
Does that include like bulldozers, cranes, earth movers, and all that as well, you think?
Yeah, we do see a lot of interest now, what we call the off-road applications. So we see that the mining community and construction equipment community trying for the first time, trialing fuel cells. Because these applications, the vehicles are too heavy for batteries. And so the only way to decarbonize these vehicles is to go with fuel cell electrification. And I would make one additional point is that we're talking about the fleet operators a moment ago, now talking about off-road applications. Whether it's a fleet operator or whether it's a mining enterprise, they're all looking at decarbonization and ESG investing. The impetus they're seeing from the investment community and the requirement for them to decarbonize their business model is very powerful. So I do think as we validate costs, as we validate a hydrogen refueling infrastructure, we're going to see a very significant switch over to electrification, including battery electric and fuel cell electric, where those technologies make sense.
So that infrastructure you talked about, the $500 billion that's being spent, is that mostly public money, government money that's going towards that, or is that assuming some private capital would come in as well?
Yeah, what we've seen so far in many cases, really a consortium or a public-private partnership. So as an example, I mentioned the 50 fueling stations in California. That's been funded, for example, by the California Energy Commission, as well as a number of industry players like Toyota, Hyundai, and others. We expect to see that model continue in the future, where we'll see industry participants as well as public money supporting the deployment of technology and hydrogen refueling infrastructure. What I do think is that we saw significant investment in wind and in solar and in battery to help scale the industries and drive down costs. Mm-hmm. And once those costs come down, as we're seeing today, real time in solar, which is the lowest cost new energy source really in many jurisdictions, as these costs come down, then policy and subsidy support can fade away. And so that we expect to see a similar type of investment being made in hydrogen to support decarbonization. And as costs come down, the government support can fade back.
Before we move on to sort of the hydrogen economy, maybe more in general, some of the automakers, I mean, getting down to the light duty vehicle market, which really is dominated by batteries right now and the Teslas and the likes. But some automakers like the Japanese and the Koreans are going for fuel cell vehicles and light duty vehicles, you know, your passenger sedans and so on, instead of battery electric. So what are they thinking? Are they thinking that fuel cells are going to be viable in that market as well?
I think most vehicle OEMs have concluded that batteries are going to win in the light duty market. You still have a couple like Toyota and Hyundai that are investing in both technologies, you know, significantly. What I would say is that there are market segments within light-duty vehicles, taxis, fleets, you know, high-utilization vans, where range is critically important and refuel time is critically important. And I think you'll see adoption in some of those market segments. But I think what's important is to think longer term, 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, and you think about some of the technology trends in passenger cars and mobility generally. We call them the ACES trend. So autonomy, connectivity, electrification, and shared mobility. And so you think about vehicles that are digitally connected, autonomously driven, high utilization, maybe used 20, 23 hours a day, you're now talking both very long range and a need for fast refueling, particularly, you know, these vehicles that are used on shared mobility platforms as the next generation typically will tap their phone and consume transportation or mobility as a service, potentially, rather than owning their own vehicle. So we see the longer-term mobility trends and technology themes supporting adoption of fuel cell technology as you see utilization rates for vehicles increasing in the long term.
So Randy, I have a question then, kind of a follow-up. I mean, there are some companies that are now saying that for long-haul big trucks, like semi-trucks, batteries might be an option. So you've got Tesla and Cummins, I believe, developing pure battery semi-trucks. Do you think that pure batteries are going to work in these applications and reduce the need for hydrogen?
I think for certain market segments, batteries are going to do a very good job, but I see those in typically the delivery lighter vehicles. These heavy trucks that Tesla and Cummins and others are talking about, I just don't believe that there is consensus around that view that battery electric will be able to satisfy the use case for those type of vehicles. So while they're keeping optionality open, I think probably what you'd hear is the consensus view is that fuel cells will dominate in those heavy vehicles, you know, long-range buses, heavy trucks, rail and marine applications, and then certain market segments where they're lighter-duty vehicles in the truck market will see battery electric, see high utilization there.
You're rebranding Ballard, I noticed from your website. Tell us about your new tagline, Here for Life. Where does that come from?
We looked at rebranding Ballard because we feel like we're moving from kind of R&D phase and early stage development and commercialization to looking at scaling moving forward. And Here for Life has a lot of texture and a lot of different connotations for the different stakeholders we have. So it really calls out the purpose of the company first and foremost, which is to deliver fuel cell power for a sustainable planet. So that purpose-based or mission-based element of a company. Secondly, we think about our customers and the entire customer journey from the first time they contact or in contact with Ballard through to quoting, through to delivery of product, through to field service, et cetera. And we think about the products that we have, and this is a real differentiator for Ballard. Our products are designed for the life cycle of those vehicles. And we're also now looking at trying to make sure we have life cycle costs. So when we think about the customers, Here for Life has a lot of connotations there. And then finally, for our employees, we really want to speak to the employee value proposition we have and the opportunity to improve the life of each employee and, in fact, their families as well. So we thought this was the right time to rebrand Here for Life, and we're pretty happy with the response we've received.
We have a question on the hydrogen. It kind of ties into the Here for Life. There was a big surge of investment in hydrogen around 20 years ago, and it was a bit of a false start. And Ballard and many of its peers went into a couple decade hibernation. Now, of course, there's a lot of interest in hydrogen for a lot of the reasons we just talked about earlier. Now, investors made and lost a lot of money the last go around. Do you think that this time is different for investing in hydrogen?
It's a great question. We get this a lot from different members of the investment community who were around back 20 years ago and have some scar tissue from that time. But there are, I think, five key differences that are really important. So the policy landscape has changed, right? So now we have policy that's really clearly focused on decarbonization. You think about 50 countries now that have CO2 pricing initiatives. You think about somewhere around 75 countries that have net zero carbon targets, typically by 2050. And 30 countries now, over 30 countries, have hydrogen roadmaps and hydrogen strategies, identifying hydrogen as a key plank for decarbonization. So the policy landscape is much different than it was 20 years ago, including policies focusing on going to zero emission, not low emission, but zero emission vehicles as well. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the corporate investment that we're seeing. And, you know, in 2015, 2016 timeframe, the Hydrogen Council really started getting formed. And today we have the Hydrogen Council with all of the key energy giants, all the mobility majors, with a CEO-led initiative here, where all the CEOs of these companies join the Hydrogen Council, have meetings to discuss the role that hydrogen fuel cells will play in decarbonization. This has become a very influential group. And there's been just significant announcements over the last 24 months with major companies investing in hydrogen and investing in fuel cell technology. The third really is the deployments I talked about earlier. So really the validation of the technology in real-world field deployments, including, as I mentioned, over 7,000 fuel cell buses and commercial trucks in operation today. The fourth would be the rise of renewables and the low-cost renewable electricity that we have coming into the grid every year globally now, and the fact that renewables are intermittent and this holy grail of energy storage, which hydrogen has always been seen as this opportunity to use hydrogen as a storage medium for this intermittent renewables. And the final one that I mentioned a few minutes ago is really ESG investing. The power that we see with this transition where capital is moving out of carbon-intensive investments and moving into investments that have sustainability for the long term. Mm-hmm. So the landscape is significantly different than it was not just 20 years ago or 10 years ago, but even 3 years ago.
Yeah. You're painting a landscape that I would certainly agree is very different from 20 years ago. But you're still also painting, I'm sort of reading into what you've just said, that it is still policy dependent, certainly, and then say over the course of the next decade. And those policies have different strengths in different regions, different countries of the world. Can you talk about, you know, which regions are the most conducive to hydrogen and fuel cell technologies, adoption of your products and mobility and so on? Like, where is it that you can actually envision a time where you don't need policies anymore to stimulate the commercial adoption of all this stuff?
Clearly, the three key markets, in my opinion, right now are Europe, China, and North America. When I say North America, it's been California up until recently. Now I'd characterize it more as the U.S. So I'll just talk briefly about the three. You know, Europe, I mentioned the Fit for 55. There is just significant investment. We'll probably see in the range of 90 to 100 gigawatts of electrolyzers being deployed in Europe between now and 2030. So massive scaling that's occurring with clear plans from the EU and cascading plans from, you know, you can pick almost any country there. They've announced their hydrogen strategies and roadmaps. So Germany, France, Spain, Portugal, the Netherlands, Norway, Denmark, et cetera. So a lot of support in Europe. And I believe we'll see Europe being a very clear market for the production of green hydrogen, as well as the applications, you know, for mobility by 2030. So you'll see the scale up occurring between 2025 and 2030. And part of the policy landscape that's important to understand for Europe is that long haul trucks basically have to have a reduction in their GHG emissions by 2025 in Europe, a 50% reduction. Similarly, if you move to California, there are new policies that came into place over the last few years in California that require 100% of all new transit buses must be zero emission by 2029, and 50% must be zero emission starting in 2025. So we're seeing this transition occurring for buses in California. And similarly, in the truck market for California, again, this is policy. These aren't targets. This mm-hmm. is policy with real teeth. All different classes of trucks, all the way from Class 2B up to Class 8, have to have a certain portion of those classes of trucks be zero emission starting in 2024 and scaling up significantly by 2035, including around 70% for most classes of trucks and then 40% for the heaviest classes of trucks. And then ultimately by 2045, 100% zero emission for all new trucks. And so those policies now, there are 15 different states in the U.S. that have adopted an MOU to embrace these type of policies moving forward. And then if you move to China, China's implemented a policy to achieve 1 million fuel cell electric vehicles, primarily commercial trucks and buses, by 2030, and 1,000 fueling stations by 2030. So I think those are the three markets we're going to see scaling occurring. And if you kind of think about when will that start in order to get there in 2030, you know, we see 2024, 2025 in California, in Europe, in China as important years, and then scaling up between 2024, 2025, and 2030.
Wow, that's a lot faster than I would have expected, like to have, you know, in California and Europe, a fair amount of zero emission heavy trucks by 2025. That's like 4 years away. So with that perspective, when you think about the momentum towards policy and some of the things you talked about, like the maturity of the technology compared to 20 years ago, and the fact that there's policies now to ban combustion engines altogether in the mid-2030s, and I guess even earlier in some regions, you know, what would the world look like to you in 2035 when you think about mobility?
It's really interesting to see what's happened with a number of different regions banning combustion engines outright in the 2030-2035 timeframe. That's been a very significant development, particularly over the last 6 months. We've had additional cities and countries come on with those type of bans. But as you look at the 2035, as I just think about mobility generally, whether it's bus, truck, rail, and marine, we just see vehicles that are safer, vehicles that are lower cost, and importantly, vehicles that are zero emission. And as we think about the scaling, you know, I think you'll see by 2035, 2 million fuel cell buses, commercial trucks, cars on roads globally, primarily in those markets that I identified, China, Europe, and the U.S. And you'll likely see in the range of about 3,000 fueling stations by 2035 as well. And I think when you think about the costs, you'll see the cost of hydrogen being, you know, in terms of renewably produced hydrogen, probably around $1 per kilogram by 2035 in key markets, with solar or wind as key inputs for that, you know, electrolysis produced green hydrogen. And you'll see fuel cell technology probably in the range of about $100 to $200 per kilowatt. So very cost effective with scaling at that time.
Well, that's a great story, really. I mean, to recap, I guess what I see is a very heartening story that we have a longstanding Canadian company and a technology leadership position globally in this hydrogen scene. There's more adoption happening behind the scenes than is apparent in fuel cells, especially PEM fuel cells. Costs are coming down and there's scale up going on regionally. Probably by the end of the decade, we're going to start to see some real momentum in this space. So Randy, thanks so much for sharing your experiences and knowledge with us. It's been delightful having you.
Thanks, Peter, and thanks, Jackie.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks to our listeners for joining this podcast. If you like the podcast, please rate us on the app that you listen to and tell someone else about us.
For more ideas and insights, visit arcenergyinstitute.com.